Good morning, everyone. My name is Dylan Wan. I'm a PhD student at Texas Tech University up in Lubbock, and I'd like to speak this morning on some of the work that I've done for my dissertation in regards to host plant thrips resistance and its potential for utilization in cotton variety development, looking specifically at field thrips resistance in some of our advanced material, but also the heritability of that resistance as well. So to get started, host plant pest resistance is something that's a very key component of integrated pest management and has been historically. As we've seen in cotton, it's been a huge boon for arthropod pest management with the advent and rapid adoption of BT technology in cotton. That's been huge for managing the Heliothis complex of pests. But aside from BT, the concept of using resistant varieties for integrated thrips management has become more of a real concept in today's age with the loss of Timic a few years ago. Now, for some more context in this presentation, I'll be presenting this information in an organic production context because this work is funded by a grant out of the Organic Research and Extension Initiative from the National Institute of Food and Agriculture. So, but the beauty of this work is host plant resistance benefits everybody. It benefits conventional growers and organic growers alike. But in the context of this presentation, I'll be talking about organic quite a bit. So that being said, thrips management is a lot trickier in organic cotton systems, largely because the use of synthetic insecticides is prohibited by USDA guidelines for organic. So we have to look at different options and different ways of managing those guys. And there's a few organic approved insecticide options out there, but there's not a lot of information on them. We've played around with one in an IPM study that I'll mention later. And actually, Monty Vandenberg has a poster about some of that data in another section if y'all want to check that out. But there are a few options for managing Heliothis pests and Lepidopteran pests, namely BT spray, but that doesn't work so hot on thrips in an organic scenario. So that being said, this puts a greater pressure on utilizing host plant resistance for integrated management in an organic production scenario. To give you a quick background on organic production in the U.S., there's about 15,000 to 16,000 acres planted annually. Netting anywhere between about 12 and 14,000 bales. So, of course, that's a drop in the bucket compared to conventional production. But the kicker is organic lint prices can net anywhere between about $1.40 to $2 a pound consistently, and sometimes upwards of about $2.50 a pound in some cases. And also seed prices from organic cotton nets upwards of about $600 a ton. So there's a big premium incentive here for growers who are able to produce an organic crop consistently, which is no easy feat sometimes. But given the unique climatic conditions that we have on the Texas High Plains, over 95% of U.S. organic cotton is produced there, mainly because we get a real hard freeze in the late fall, which acts as a good mechanical defoliant for this cotton, because there's no chemical options that organic growers can take advantage of to defoliate their stuff. So we have to rely on that freeze. And in that area, most of the growers grow one of two varieties, either Fibromax 989 or some derivation of Fibromax 958 is the most prevalent one. And they've been seed saving a lot of that for about a decade now. So there's a big need for fresh new varieties to be on the market for these guys, but also for varieties that have good host plant pest resistance, so whether it's diseases or insects in the absence of chemicals. So the nice thing about organic production is crop rotations are mandatory for certification, and so you see actually very few issues, surprisingly, with verticillium wilt as well as nematode issues in organic systems. So that's a nice boon. In the absence of those issues, thrips are a major concern for organic growers. They're the first pests out there in the growing season, and while they don't cause a lot of yield detriments, they can significantly delay fiber maturity over the course of the growing season, which can be a big issue, especially for these guys who are very intentional about their fiber quality as well. So it just so happened that we already had screening efforts in place for novel thrips resistance in a number of different cotton accessions, and so that's the direction that we've been heading the last couple years with this organic project. So the two objectives of this study that I'll be talking about today were first to evaluate a number of breeding lines, a lot of our material and a few others' material for field thrips resistance and compare it back to the commercial standards that the organic guys have been growing and a few other cultivars, and also to try and estimate Broadsense heritability of thrips resistance to get an idea of how well we're able to see this in the field and observe it, and also to give us an idea of how well we're making advances in our thrips nursery. So let's take a look at this field evaluation. We conducted field trials this last year in 2013. This is an update on some of the information I presented in this session last year, if some of you all remember that. So this is this year's information. We had two yield locations at Meadow and Halfway, Texas, close to Lubbock. We planted 20 genotypes in a randomized complete block experimental design. 15 of those were advanced breeding lines, four were cultivars, two of which were 958 and 989, and then we had one released germplasm, or recently released germplasm line included as well. We conducted thrips injury ratings on every genotype early season in about the fourth to fifth true leaf stage. To give you an idea of what that looked like, we used a 1 to 9 visual rating scale. So pictured here on the right, that's a 1, so that's essentially complete necrosis because of thrips, and then a 9 being a completely undamaged plant. So that gives you the bookends of that spectrum. So we relied solely on a visual injury rating for this phenotyping. We also collected yield data at both locations. So we're still processing a lot of that data, so I only have yield data from the Halfway location for the sake of this presentation today. And then we analyzed all of our data using the general linear model in both AgriBase and SAS, and separated our means using Fisher's LSD test at a significance level of 0.05. Let's take a look at some of our results. This is a graph of the results from our thrips injury ratings that we did early season. On the x-axis, we have all of our genotypes, and on the y-axis, we have our thrips scale. Again, 1 is necrosis, 9 is an undamaged plant, so the higher the number, the better in this case. And we had pretty heavy thrips pressure at both locations this year, so a lot of these numbers were depressed, but we did see significant differences statistically among a lot of our genotypes. And what I want to point out primarily is we had four standout lines that did very well in this evaluation, three of it which were these CT lines. These are some of the cultivar lines, that's what CT stands for, that John Ganaway developed and started selecting for early in the early 1990s. And the characteristic thing about these is they have a real thick cuticle, which we think is conferring a high degree of thrips tolerance as well as cold tolerance. And you can see that pretty clearly out in the field. The other one that did really, really well was this 802GD, which the GD stands for not what you think it does. It stands for genetic diversity, so it was actually good. But something that we threw in this last year to get an idea of how it performed in this test under an organic management system, and it did very, very well from a thrift standpoint. So among these four, these guys did really, really well. So that another graph of our thrips ratings from the Halfway location. So the first graph was from our Meadow location. We see a little heavier pressure this year with more depressed ratings, but we saw differences that were significant among genotype. Again, we saw these four lines that stood out pretty well from the rest of these genotypes. Here we have our 958 and 989 to give you guys an idea of what the commercial standards look like compared to these. And so we're pretty excited to see that consistency. Again, these CT lines were very prominent, as well as this 802GD, so it's good to see some consistency there. Let's take a look at our yield information. This is a graph of our yield from Halfway. We have genotype on the x-axis and, of course, yield on the y-axis in kilograms per hectare, and saw good yields among a lot of these genotypes, the most notable of which were, of course, 958, which is our standard, so he did really, really well. We also saw these other two that did well, and Tamcott 73 did very well, which is one of lines out of, or a cultivar out of the College Station program. But what we really were excited about was this 802GD did very well from a yield standpoint. So it was good to see that it had solid thrips tolerance in the field without sacrificing a lot of yield to do that and together. So something also want to point out as well is this 519 CT. Right here, that's one of those other lines that did very well in our thrips evaluations, and so it's good too to see a good combination of yield potential as well as a high level of tolerance out in the field. So that was pretty encouraging and good to go forward with that next year. So let's take a look at broad sense heritability of this resistance. Conducted field and greenhouse trials in 2012 and 2013 to evaluate this heritability. We utilized a randomized complete block experimental design. We evaluated two different families that were both derived from separate interspecific crosses between Gossypium hirsutum accessions and Barbadens accession, Barbadens being the resistant parent as a species. In our greenhouse evaluation, we artificially elevated thrips populations using wheat that we killed and dumped those thrips onto those germinating cotton seedlings. And for our phenotyping, we also used that same 1 to 9 visual scale. So all of these were done on a visual basis on an individual level. In our field test, we evaluated 1407 CT, which is one of those cold-tolerant lines. That was one of the hirsutum parents, and our barbitance parent was cobalt. We included the F1 and F2 generations. In our greenhouse test, we included CA2266, which is our hirsutum parent. Texas 110 was our very barbitance parent. And then we included our F1 through F3 generations. Heritability was determined from the components and variance method utilizing these equations. Our environmental variance, we calculated from the mean of the parental and F1 variances in each respective test. And our phenotypic variance was determined from the total variance of the F2 population in our field test, and then the F2 and F3 populations in the greenhouse test. So let's take a look at those results. We saw a fairly low values, lower values than I expected. In the field test between 1407 CT and cobalt, we saw about a 26% broad sense heritability. But then among the F2 and F3 generations from this 2266 by 110 cross, we saw fairly consistent values, about 23% and then about 28%. So these are a little lower than I was anticipating, but this thrips resistance has shown itself to be very, very quantitative in previous evaluations. And so this is something that is to be expected, some of these values. And so what it also tells me, too, is while I wish those numbers were a little higher or significantly higher in the greenhouse where we hope to have less variation on a smaller scale, it does show that there's some consistency, a good degree of consistency in our phenotyping between the field and the greenhouse. So that's encouraging to me to see that our selections in our field are reliable, and we've seen that in our thrips nursery as well. But it does raise the question that perhaps there's some wiggle room for refining our phenotyping method to rely on a more direct, quantifiable measurement. So to conclude, we saw a number of notable differences among our genotypes for thrips injury as well as yield potential. 519 CT, 1407 CT, and 802 GD all were good candidates for exhibiting high thrips tolerance out in the field, but 519 CT and 802 GD had the best combinations of both thrips tolerance as well as yield potential together. And finally, we saw somewhat low broad sense heritability values for thrips tolerance, but feel like it's still a reliable trait to select for out in the field, as we've seen in our thrips nursery as well. So some other work we're doing and continuing to do under this grant is we're continuing that thrips nursery, working on developing new varieties, hopefully to be released, derived from interspecific crosses between upland and Pima accessions. We're also working on a mapping study to identify a potential molecular marker or markers for the thrips resistance. And finally, we just completed our first year of an integrated pest management study where we combined a number of our resistant genotypes that we identified in our previous evaluations with an approved insecticide that's shown some promise for integrated thrips management organically. So with that, I would like to acknowledge Dr. Jane Deaver and Eric Hecke, who are my two co-advisors up in Lubbock, as well as Mark Arnold and Heather Flippin, who have been key for making all this research happen, as well as the cotton improvement crew there at the Texas A&M AgriLife Station in Lubbock, who have been paramount for making this happen. And I would like to also thank the National Institute of Food and Agriculture for funding all this work. So with that, we'll conclude and open the floor for any questions. Yes, sir. The question was, what's the major thrips species in the High Plains? And that's going to be Western flower thrips. You see a balance of Western flower thrips as well as onion thrips there on the High Plains, but it's primarily Western flower in our evaluations on the High Plains.
Okay. Second question is, with your three F2 populations and one F3 population, how many individuals did you screen?
Okay. The question was, how many individuals did we screen among the F2 and F3 populations for the heritability study? In the field test, that was kind of a post hoc evaluation that we did from our mapping study. So for F2, we had about 240 individuals that we evaluated. But in the greenhouse, obviously, we were much more limited on space. So we only had an N of about 48 for each respective generation. Yes, sir.
Especially the segregating populations normally show hybrid breakdown.
Okay, the question is, why did we use Pima accessions in our crosses? Well, Barbadans as a species has a very, very high level of natural resistance to thrips. We think the literature suggests that it's mainly from a thicker outer leaf epidermal layer that's conferring the resistance. And so we wanted to try and integrate that trait into something that was usable and didn't look like a tree. Now, the Texas 110, unfortunately, was extremely photoperiodic, which we found that out the hard way. We've still got some great generations that are about F5, F6 right now in our nursery that we've been able to tame and make less photoperiodic. But we ended up transitioning to using cobalt as our Pima accession because it was far less wild and it was non-photoperiodic as well, but still had a high level of thrips resistance too. Yes, ma'am.
Do you have an idea, either from segregation ratios or any mapping data, how many different genes might be segregating in that resistance?
Okay, the question is how many genes may be segregating in that thrips resistance? And the answer is two or more. More than likely, more than two. I've done some segregation ratios and it could potentially be a 15-to-1 ratio, but more than likely it's going to be more genes than that. So it hasn't fallen very, very prettily into a nice ratio that made sense. So thinking about the number of factors that could be related to cuticle thickness or leaf epidermal layer thickness, both of which interact together to confer greater thrips tolerance, that could be a number of different factors. So that's something we looked at a little bit but haven't delved into too deeply, but would be interesting.
Thank you, Dylan.
Thank you.